the book begins, these are the words of Nehemiah ben Chachalia. We've already talked about not knowing who Chachalia is. It is the month of Kislev, right? This is one of those cases in which we get the Babylonian name, as we assume it is, the Babylonian name of a month, as opposed to it was month 4 or 5, 6, or whatever it is. It is Shnas Esrim, it is year 20 of King Artaxaste, Vani Aisi B'Shushan Avira, and I was in Shushan. Shushan is, of course, known for being the setting where the Purim story takes place, but it's the summer center of the Persian Empire. This is one of those cases in which I think Zakham has a mistake, because he says it's the winter center, but everything I've seen indicates, no, Shushan is where you want to be in the summer. I've never been, but I'm told it's beautiful in the summer. So this is the summertime capital of the Persian Empire, and that's where he is serving King Artaxaste. Vayavo Hanani echad me'achai, who va'anashim mi'yuda, Hanani, one of my achim. We're going to come back to that term. Literally, it means brothers. One of my brothers. He came along with men from Yehuda. And I asked him about the Jews from the remnant to remain from the captivity, and I asked him about Jerusalem. And they said to me, "Hanisharim asher nisharum and hashavi sham ba medina, those who remain from the captivity there in that land, bera'ah gedola uvecherpa, things are really bad. It's humiliating. The Chomas Yerushalayim Miforatzes, the wall of Jerusalem is burst through. It has holes in it. Usharen Tzu Ba'esh, its gates have been set on fire. Vayihi Kishramiyas Hadvirim Ha'ela. Well, when I heard that, Yashavti Va'evkevas Ablayamim, I sat and cried and mourned for a period of time. Yamim, days, but Yamim is often used to mean longer than that. We don't know how long it is. And I fasted and prayed before the God of Heaven being the name that we use for God consistently throughout Ezra and Nehemiah. Koresh used the term also, as I recall. Okay, what questions are sparked by these four sentences we just read? What here needs explanation? Definitely something. This is not straightforward.
Right. Like
yeah.
How do we know?
What is their relationship?
Is that suddenly a lineage for us? Or?
What's their relationship? But more than that, was this a planned meeting? Was this arranged in advance? If it wasn't arranged, how did you get to the second in command in the empire? Right? Hanani from Judea. Where did this meeting take place? How did this happen? So that's one question, is there a channel back and forth? What's behind this? What else? Focusing on the description of what's going on in sentence 3.
They've been attacked.
Have they been attacked? What are you describing here? Is this just a description of what we already knew was the case since the time when the Babylonians destroyed the temple and sacked Jerusalem? Or is there something new going on at this stage? Those are the two main questions that I have reading this. Number one, is this an arranged meeting or just something spontaneous that somehow took place? And is this about something new or is this old? So first in terms of Hanani, the identity of Hanani. He calls him Achi, my brother. It's very interesting to me. Dat Mikra and others assume this is a biological brother. I thought that was really strange to assume that Achad Me'achai, one of my brothers, means a biological brother. Encyclopedia Mikra'it thinks it's a general family member. I'm not buying it. I gave you references, which you don't need to spend time looking up right now, but in source number 7, I gave you references to other places in Tanakh, and this wasn't a search. You could probably find many more. In which, Achai just means my friend.
Yeah. Here, that's Rashi.
In the Sanzino? What?
It says, either kinsman or fellow countrymen, it is doubtful whether blood brother is intended even in chapter 7, verse 2.
Right. My general sense is that just means an ally. ally. The examples I gave you on the sheet in source number 7, Shmuel Bed is David and Yehonah's son, right? Clearly not brothers. They had enough trouble. Shmuel Bet is even better example. The second Shmuel Bet reference is Yoav and Amasa, right before Yoav killed him. He calls him my brother. Then again, there's a lot of that in the Torah, isn't there? And then the one from Malachim Aleph is Shlomo and Hiram, king of Tzur. Also, not brothers, not separated at birth. Alina.
With Yosef, he says, Etzachai and Yerakesh. He's asking for his brothers, and that
right. Was his brother. Right. I'm not saying that Achai never means my biological brothers. I just think that there's really no imperative here to assume it's a biological brother. It's simply one of my friends and allies. That's what I would have said. And indeed, Rashi, Mitzvot, David, and Melvin say it's allies. That's all it is.
Yeah. In this trivia, but in Israel today, when you meet someone in a restaurant, Yemach Shalom Achai. That's the going. How are you guys?
Yeah.
Is Achai is used for no one? Yeah. Not nonsense.
Right, it's just, it's brothers loosely.
Yeah.
What is clear is that he knows Hanani, it's not just someone in a restaurant, because in chapter 7, and this is what Susan was alluding to, in chapter 7, sentence 2, he's going to appoint Hanani with guarding the new walls of Yerushalayim. So, Hanani is not just some guy. Hanani is known to him and is a trusted person. Now, based on that, I would assume that this is not a chance meeting. Right? This is not random. This is, I want to keep tabs on what's going on in Judea, and therefore I arranged for a delegation to come visit me, and that's how I know what's going on. So Nehemiah is not lone Jew living in exile off on his own and not interested in Judea. He's interested, he's keeping tabs, and he has a meeting with Jews who made the journey in order to keep him posted. That's what I think is going on. Now I'll show you where the problem comes in. Take a look at source number 8. Josephus has a version of this meeting. And look how he describes it. Now there was one of those Jews that had been carried captive who was cupbearer to King Xerxes. His name was Nehemiah. As this man was walking before Susa, Shushan, the metropolis of the Persians, he heard some strangers that were entering the city after a long journey speaking to one another in the Hebrew tongue. So he went to them and asked them whence they came. And when their answer was that they came from Judea, he began to inquire of them again in what state the multitude was, and in what condition Jerusalem was. And when they replied that they were in a bad state, then he was upset, and so on and so forth. How does Josephus make it sound? This is the Wisden translation, by the way. I didn't translate this from the Greek. Sorry? Completely spontaneous. Oh, some Hebrews. I hear them speaking Hebrew. Let me go see what's going on. And it's outside the walls. Right? He's walking before Susa. He's outside of the citadel. And he happens to encounter them. And just, lo and behold, he gets information. So tell me, it doesn't sound that way in the book at all. He's not some stranger. He is Achai, whatever Achai means. So why did Josephus write that? What motivated him to present it this way?
Does it look sort of like you're the Muslims if you have meetings?
Yep. That's exactly what it looks like. If you are the second in command in the Persian Empire, you are not supposed to have a special interest in the minority, even if it is your minority. You are an agent of the king, and it looks suspicious for you to hold clandestine meetings with the representatives of Judea, right? And especially Jews always being vulnerable to the charge of dual loyalty, right? How in the world is this going to look if you are the Jew high up in the government and you're having meetings with the Israelis on the side? It's not going to look good. And for Josephus, this is a special concern. Because remember who Josephus is. He's a Jewish general who survives the mysterious death of the people he was supposed to be leading. That's its own story. And he ends up in the Roman camp, and he ingratiates himself to the Romans. And he writes histories of the Jews that are meant to win the favor of the Romans. And he himself is going to be high up in the government. and close with Titus and so on, I think he's afraid when he tells this story, he's afraid of how it's going to look. If he says Jewish higher up in the empire has meetings with Jews off in their land, how long is it going to take for someone to wonder about Josephus personally? This is not my own novelty. Years and years ago, when I learned about Josephus at YU, this was always a point that was made. When you read Josephus, you have to ask yourself, what's his agenda in terms of his relationship with the Romans? And here, I think that's what you're seeing. I think this story is meant to show us Nehemiah was concerned. He was getting a report because he wanted to know what was going on. And what Josephus is doing is he's shading it for his own sake. Clear? Okay. That's in terms of... Sorry?
Like, he's writing the history, could it not just be his own sake, but... The presentation to other people who are reading about Jews?
That could be. It could be it's not just about his own position, but in general, he wants Jews not to be seen as a fifth column. Right. That's possible. So that's in terms of what this meeting is about, but it will also color how we answer the other question, which is, what is Hanani describing? Is this the desolation that happened many years ago? The walls are in ruins. The walls have been ruins already since day one. Why do you, you know, that's not a novelty. The people are, you know, the remnants of the people are not great. What is this about? So first of all, two different views of what population he's even talking about when he says the remnant Jews. Take a look at source number 9, please, at the Reed of Malbim. He says, Nirad appears... Shahayehudim Sheshavu Birshus Koresh, that the Jews who returned with the permission of Cyrus, Ve'achakach Birshus Artachshasta, and afterwards with Artachshasta's permission, Hayalem Pacha Miuchad, they had a special Pacha, a special governor. Rak HaYehud, and that's the reference to Ezra 5, is talking about either Sheshbatzar or Zerubbabel, I forget which, being their leader. Rak HaYehudim Shayusham Mikodem, but the Jews who were there from before, meaning Jews who never left. Right. Shayu Tachas Pikudas Pachvas Eber Hanahar. They are under the governor of that general region called the other side of the river. Meaning not the other side of the Jordan, the other side of the Euphrates. Those people, Alehem Sha'al, that's who he was asking about. How are the native Jews, not the Jews who had just returned? And they were in a terrible, shameful state. Because the pachas oppressed them. And that's what it means when it says those who remained, right? That was the sentence. He asked about the Jews who remained. It means the ones who had remained all along. For everybody else, the Jews who had come back from captivity, the Pacha was a protector for them. For them, it was for them, things were relatively good. So the Malbim's read is the conventional read. That Nehemiah is asking him, how are the Jews who have been there all along? And the report is, not good. Things are bad these days. The Rashi brings you a different approach in source number 10. He says, "Sha'alti lahem alanyam pleitasa yehudim asher nisharu b'Yerushalayim min hashevi shel Bavel." I asked about the refugee Jews who had remained in Yerushalayim from Babylonian captivity. In other words, they all came back to the land and they went to their cities, but some stayed in Jerusalem, and he called them the pleita. The refugees, Hashem Shinit Solu Migalus Bavel, they have been saved from Babylonian exile. If you wanted to read Rashi to be talking about the Jews who had stayed in Israel all along, you could force Rashi's Hebrew into that, but there are other commentators who are of this view as well, like Mitzudat David, that in fact it's talking about the Jews who had returned from Babylon. Either way, when was this destruction, the burning of the walls? So the conventional read is that this is a new destruction. This is something new. The walls are still in ruin from the Churban, from the destruction of the temple. And they haven't built new walls yet. Right? That part of it is old. But as a result of that, we are constantly under attack now. And to take that back to our question of how long has Nehemiah been in his position, I don't think you can bring any proof from the fact that Hanani came to him now. He's not coming to him now because now Nehemiah is in power. He's coming to him now because now is when it happened. The Jews, remember, we learned back in the book of Ezra, the Jews are under attack by their Samaritan neighbors who don't like this project of building a Beis HaMikdash, of building a temple. And there have been new attacks going on. And Hanani says to Nehemiah, we have a problem because we are vulnerable. Clear? Dan Mikra notes that if you were to read Ezra 4 as having taken place where it shows up in the book of Ezra, if you read everything as though the books are written in chronological order, they actually did start building the walls at one point, because in Ezra 4 we had that. I didn't feel that you had to read that story as having occurred then. But if you read it that way, then they did start to build walls, and that's what burned. Okay. So Nehemiah is very upset. Right? Sentence 4, his reaction is crying, fasting, praying, sounds an awful lot like Ezra. Right? This is indistinguishable from Ezra. Ezra's reaction when he heard about the intermarriages, that's his reaction when he hears about what has happened. And then he bursts forth in prayer, just as Ezra did. But there are some striking things about about this prayer. Take a look first, before you read this prayer, take a look at Daniel chapter 9. I referenced it on your sheet in source number 11. Daniel chapter 9. This is in page 1801. You don't have to flip far. Remember that Daniel is not that long before Nehemiah, right? He's a generation or two. He's the first generation of Babylonian exiles. So Daniel, in this part of the book of Daniel, he has visions related to the prediction of Jewish suffering and then ultimately return in a messianic time. And he gets a vision which frightens him. And look what he says to God. And here, really, the Hebrew will help you more than the English. For those who have the Hebrew, you'll recognize a lot of his language. He says, chapter 9, sentence 4, the very beginning of it, he says, Ana Hashem, Hakel HaGadol HaNora, VaNora, Shomer HaBris VeHaChesed LaOhavav LeShomrei Mitzvosav. Those are phrases we know. Hakel HaGadol VaHanora is a phrase that's very similar to what Moshe uses, which we're going to see shortly. Shomer HaBris VeHaChesed LaOhavav is straight out of the Torah as well. Parshas Vayeshanan, Devarim chapter 7. Chatanu, Avinu, these are standard phrases for sin. He goes on to describe the sins of the Jewish people and to draw on verses in Tanakh throughout this rather extended prayer. I'm not going to go through the entire thing because this is a class about Ezra and Nehemiah, not about Daniel. But Nehemiah is going to do the same thing. Nehemiah is going to do the same exact thing, drawing on verses from around Tanakh. Let's take a look at his prayer, and I gave you the references on the sheet, which we're not going to look up now, but I give to you for homework. You'll see the way that he draws on passages in Tanakh. Sentence 5, back in Nehemiah. So what page are we on now? I've lost track of where we are. Sorry? 1839, thank you. Again, the Hebrew will help you more in terms of the associations with other verses. Va'omar, he says, and I said, Ana Hashem Elokei HaShemayim, God, please, the God of the heavens, Hakel HaGadol VaHanora, sound familiar? Same as Daniel. Shomer HaBris VaChesed LaOhavav LeShomrei Mitzvasav, same as Daniel. Right? Literally translated, the great and awesome God, guardian of the covenant and kindness for those who love him, those who keep his mitzvot. Pasuk Vav, sentence 6. Tihina oznecha kasheves, veinecha fisuchos, lishmoa el tfilas avdecha, asher anochim espalel fonecha hayom yomam valayla al b'nei Yisrael avadecha. He says, may your ear hear. May your eyes be open. to hear the prayer of your servant, that which I pray to you today, day and night, for the Jews who serve you. This statement of his is very like Shlomo HaMelech when he dedicated the Beis HaMikdash, and he said, God, please pay attention to, turn your eyes, turn your ears, to the prayer of the Jews, which they will pray in their exiles towards you. I am admitting the sins of the Jews, which we have sinned to you. And I have sinned, and my household has sinned. Then the next two sentences, I don't think have a parallel elsewhere. I think the next two sentences are original. Chavol chaval nulach. That's a very hard phrase to translate. Literally, chavol chaval nulach, we have wounded you. Is that the way your translations take it?
We have
dealt corruptly with you. Destructively with you. Okay, we're going to have to come back to that phrase. I'm not going to do it right now. But it means we've done something bad, but we have to come back to the specifics because it's actually a fascinating point. We didn't keep the laws that you commanded, Moshe your servant. Remember that which you instructed Moshe your servant, saying, Atem timalu. You trespass. Note the word timalu, mal, just the same word that Ezra used for their intermarriages. Ani afitz eschem ba'amim. I'm going to scatter you among the nations. If you sin, you're going to get hit. So I remember that, he says. And I admit what we've done, but keep in mind what you then told us. And here he starts to quote Chumash again. Vishavtem elai, you return to me. Ushmartem mitzvosai, you guard my mitzvot. Vaasisem osam, you practice them. Im yehyeni dachachem biktei hashamayim misham akabetzeim. If you are scattered to the edges of the earth, I will gather them from there. Just like Moshe said, im yehyeni dachachem biktei hashamayim misham akabetzcha Hashem Elokecha. Or here's another one. Vahaviosim el hamakom asher bacharti. I will bring them to the place I selected, l'shakenes shimi sham, to place my name. You can see it on your sheets. I gave you the references to the verses that he is paralleling, so you have the option of looking them up. Vehem avadecha ve'amecha. Also, a direct quote from Moshe. Parshas Ekev, correct. Vehem avadecha ve'amecha. They are your servants. Vehem amcha v'nachlasecha is Moshe. Asher padisa b'chokacha gadol u'bircha chazaka, who you redeemed with your great strength, with your mighty hand. Slight difference from what Moshe said. Moshe said asher padisa b'chokacha gadol u'bizra'acha hanetuya. But it's fundamentally the same point. And he says, Ana Hashem, please God, he now concludes, Tihina aznacha kasheves el tfilas avdecha vel tfilas avadecha. May your ear listen. Once again, that point about the ear listening to the prayer of your servants and to the prayer of your servants, plural, myself and the community. Hachafeitzim liyera'ayas shemecha, who want to revere your name. Ve'atzlicha nala avdecha hayom. Make your servant successful today. Usnehu l'rachamim lifnei ha'ish hazeh. Give him mercy before that man. Who is that man? Who does he want mercy in front of?
Himself.
No, in front of King Artaxerxes. He's saying, you can imagine Esther saying this, right? Give me mercy in front of that man, Achashverosh, right? Give me mercy in front of Artaxerxes. And I, he concludes, this is not part of the prayer, this is him turning to the audience, and he says, and I was the cupbearer at this point, and therefore in position to do something about this. That's the statement of Nehemiah. Okay, so that's his prayer. What's the idea here of building off of these verses in Tanakh? What is it that Achem is trying to accomplish?
Continuity.
What do you mean?
That he's carrying on the tradition, that he's the next in line as a leader.
Next in line as a leader. In other words, I am the outgrowth of those who came before me. Right? Good.
jog their memory.
He's not the only one, but it's already been said with Moshe, and I'm reiterating and showing you, A, my knowledge, and B, this, I'm not the first one to say this. This was already at Sinai.
Right, and that actually is something that we do as well, right? We consistently, every blessing we have in the Amidah, in general, our prayers, are structured on the ones found in Tanakh, on verses found in Tanakh. We always incorporate them. Refa'inu Hashem b'nei Rafei is Yirmiyahu. Refa'ini Hashem b'nei Rafei. That's true for everything that we do. It's built on biblical verses.
Giving yourself strength by referring to those who came before.
Strength, authenticity. I think these are to the point. It's the way that we traditionally pray. This is what we do, and this is what he does. Also, I think it establishes Nehemiah's religious identity. He's not only a political figure, he's a religious leader as well. But I think there's one more element here. The lines that he quotes come from really just two speakers. He doesn't bring you from all over Tanakh. He brings you from Moshe, on the verge of entry into Israel, right, in Devarim, Moshe's last speech to the Jews. Or next to last, if you count Hazinu separately, fine. The Jews on the verge of their entry into Israel, and Shlomo on dedicating the first Beis HaMikdash. Right, that speech from Shlomo and Malachim, that's when they're dedicating the first temple. So Nehemiah is looking to rejuvenate this third entry into the land. And he echoes Moshe at the first entry into the land, Shlomo, the second entry into the land, and here we are at the third. And my prayer is going to evoke those leaders from the first two times. And I think that may also be what he's trying to accomplish here. There is more to be said, as always. Next time, God willing, we're going to come back to this prayer because there are some things that we need to see about it. And then we'll go further into the second parak, God willing. We are zooming. Thank you very much.